brightly so I can see your pretty face, Gus murmured quietly.
With his words, the indigo contract glowed so brightly that it felt like a flashbang was going off constantly. Then it was gone, in a moment, subsiding to a very deep and steady glowing color.
Fuck, she really is crazy, but crazy for me. Calm, calm yourself, whispered Gus. Calm, calm, calm. No need for an example or show, okay? Everything is fine. Your mind is just running away with you.
The bright glow of her contract faltered for a second, flickered, then slowly went out.
There we go. Everything is okay, right? Not gonna do anything rash?
Gus asked, slowly pulling his hand away from her mouth.
No, said Melody, almost under her breath. Nothing rash.
Good. You're okay now?
Yes, I'm okay.
Great. Now, let's go close up this job and then reset your contracts. I don't care if they're due or not. We're gonna make sure they're all quite solid.
Got it. Okay. Yes.
Great,
Gus said, then gave Melody a kiss.
Now, get your sweet ass moving.
Getting out of the car, Gus adjusted his coat and looked over toward Trish and Vanessa.
She just had a hiccup. We're good,
he said by way of explanation. Trish nodded her head, though Vanessa looked curious. Gus gave her a flick of his hand, trying to wave her off the subject. Frowning, Vanessa gave him a grudging nod, then turned back to Trish. Walking over to Melody's door, Gus opened it and held it there.
Come along, Mrs. Hellstrom. I do believe we're on time, but we could easily be late,
Gus said. Staring at him from the driver's seat, Melody sat there, her hands in her lap. Grimacing, she put her hands over her face and held them there for several seconds. He had the feeling like she was casting a spell, but he had nothing to confirm that.
I'm sorry. I just don't like being away from you. I knew what was going on with you and John and Chloe and maybe Sarah and I got jealous. I got envious. Then I realized it could be the opposite, that you hated what was happening and I might lose you like that,
Melody admitted in a rush.
And now...
Melody's voice trailed off, which was, oddly enough, followed by a grunt.
Okay, all better,
Melody said in a much calmer tone, letting her hands drop.
And yes, I'd like help with my contracts tonight. Thank you.
Getting out of the car, Melody gave Gus a quick kiss before going over to Trish and Vanessa.
She's not handling this half as well as she pretends she is. That, or there's something wrong with her contracts. Maybe I can get a hold of Dave and see what he thinks. Or Sam.
I think it's just the reality of it. She knows you love her, but she also has... Well, her mind isn't right. And as you said, it runs away with her.
True.
Gus followed the trio of women into the building as he considered the situation. They led him straight into a meeting room where he sat in a chair without really seeing anyone or anything. So deep was he in his worries for Melody. It wasn't until Vanessa dug an elbow into his side that he pulled himself out of his thoughts. Looking around, he found that Kat and Leanne had joined them. Both of the women were clearly dressed for work today, which made sense since they'd asked Melody to meet them at their building.
Said you had results?
Leanne asked, taking a seat at the meeting room table.
Yes,
Melody said, pulling her bag closer to herself and opening it. Reaching inside, she pulled out a manila folder. Reaching across to the other side of the table, Melody set it down in front of Leanne.
At first, we were following leads on an individual known as Yellow Eyes.
Oh, I've heard of him, Kat said with a small laugh. There was this whole website around him. It was rather curious. I've never seen anything like it. I won't lie that I'd have expected him to show up in your search for retribution. I'm gratified to hear you had a similar thought.
Yes, Gus was able to track down the server that hosted that site, actually. Everything on it mostly ended up feeding back on itself,
Melody explained.
One of my techs is still going through it to see if there's anything worthwhile, but most of it was just people talking about what they didn't know.
Sounds like a lot of online forums and boards out there, cracked Leanne.
Indeed,
Melody agreed, any trace of her earlier break with Sanity long gone.
We were able to eliminate the Yellow Eyes as a candidate. He's just a very unique human, from what we can tell, though he's currently experiencing some health problems. From the records my tech was able to pull up, it looks like some form of cancer, but they're not sure. A lot more tests still to do.
That's a pity,
Leanne said, resting her fingers on the manila folder. She'd demonstrated a great amount of self-control so far in not opening it.
Based on what I'd heard of him from Kit, he was quite the warrior for justice.
Kit? All right. Kit, Cat, Leanne, Lily. Is it Kit or Cat?
Gus asked, interrupting the flow of the meeting.
And Leanne or Lily?
Both women looked at him with surprise, then Leanne snorted.
Lily would be lovely to hear for once,
Lily said. Kit, please, Kit added, then turned back to Melody.
You know, I do agree with Lily. It'll be nice to hear my own name, Kit said inside his mind.
He hadn't even felt her enter.
And though I do regret that you found Retribution dead, it isn't the end. As Melody hinted at previously, I'll let Lily discuss it when we get to it.
You're just too strong. Far too strong.
Thank you. I've had a lot of practice. My husband, helped me focus my power to a very precise point, Kit said.
Moved on to another plane, opened by a planar lord,
Melody said, and then tapped the folder in front of Lily.
We were able to locate Retribution on that plane, as it was apparently his personal plane.
Lily opened the folder and was presented with one of the photos Gus had taken.
Damn,
sighed Lily. Picking up the picture, she looked at it with a good deal of intensity.
I already peeked through all your memories. I didn't see anything I could help with, but Lily might be able to figure out something. She's far more into the arcane of this world than I am. She'll offer any input if you ask, suggested Kit.
Lily,
Gus began as the woman slowly sorted through the pictures.
Those circles all around Retribution. Any thoughts? I get the impression you're somewhat of an expert on the arcane.
Lily's eyebrows lifted slightly on her forehead, then she smirked and glanced over at Kit.
Yes, you could say that, she muttered. As to what I see, no, I don't know what the circles are, but they're clearly representative of some type of magic.
Gustavus was unable to physically touch the corpse, by the way,
Melody added.
Those circles were projecting a field upward that prevented anyone from crossing.
Warding as well? Why would you put up warding around a corpse?
Lily asked herself.
It's just a corpse. Though the corpse of an angel who was around at the dawn of time, so maybe I could see that. A witch doctor or a necromancer could do a lot with a corpse like that. And that's just the obvious people. I mean, if I could get my hands on that, I'm sure I could cast a false soul into it and turn it to my bidding. In fact, how about you take me there and—
Lily, focus, Kit said, tapping her fingers against the table.
yes, focus,
Lily replied, setting the photos back down in the folder.
Well, that means we need to move to the next job, then. We can pay you in advance for the job in its entirety again, if you're available and we can agree on a price.
We're always willing to hear jobs out,
Melody said with a wide smile.
Wonderful. Let me just call someone in,
Lily said, and then got up out of her chair. Walking over to the door, she opened it and looked outside.
We'll need you. Could you come in?
Holding the door open to the side, Lily stood there waiting. In walked a young man Gus immediately recognized. A green-eyed, brown-haired youth who seemed far too self-confident and clearly knew he was good-looking.
Alex!
Melody exclaimed loudly.
Ah, Auntie Mel,
said the young man with a laugh.
I had no idea you'd be here. You brought Uncle Gus, too. Hi, Uncle.
Uncle what?
Melody bounced out of her seat and wrapped up Alex in a hug, holding the young man tightly.
Auntie, stop it,
muttered the young man.
Not on your life, mister. I haven't seen you in a year or two. Oh, you've gotten so big. How's Abby?
Melody said, leaning back and looking at the young man.
Abby? As in Abigail? Is he?
About as well as you'd expect. Dad's keeping her busy,
Alex said.
You know how he is with her.
That I do.
Melody said with a laugh, and then looked at Gus and the rest of the room.
This is Alex Winters, my nephew. He's Sam's son.
Snorting at that, Gus wasn't surprised in the least.
Son of an incubus. Of course he is.
He was still rather amused at the little prank Alex had played on him previously.
Uncle Gus, just forget about that little favor we had going. I thought for sure I'd have to have you bail me out of prison.
Alex said with a wave of his hand.
Five beat someone nearly to death. She can be a really violent thing sometimes.
What favor are you?
Melody's question was cut short when her phone went off with a strange ringtone that Gus had never heard before.
Oh, damn,
Melody said, looking at Kit and Lily.
I'm sorry, but I have to take this. It's my father.
Pulling her phone out of her pocket, Melody tapped it and flicked a finger across the screen.
Tell Great Uncle Miles hi for me,
Alex said, taking the seat next to Melody's.
And that his birthday present last year was amazing.
Leaning across the table, Gus got Alex's attention with a look alone.
Really? Sam's kid? You didn't even tell me?
Gus asked.
You know what? Yeah, bad form on my part. Sorry, Uncle Gus. That's on me,
Alex said with a nod of his head.
Don't tell my dad, will you? He gets a bit touchy about bad salesmanship.
Of course he does. He's an incubus.
I actually like the young man. He'd survive when others wouldn't,
Indali murmured.
Yeah, me too. Reminds me of a few people I knew.
I'm so sorry,
Melody said, looking rather confused, her phone somewhat forgotten in her right hand.
I just told my father about what was going on, and he really wants to be here. I imagine he'll
be right here,
said a man's voice from the doorway behind Melody.
Ah, looks like the end of the world started without me.
Standing there was the curator, a personage of power and influence over most of the world and most countries. He appeared to be in his mid-30s, had light brown hair and brown eyes with rings of bright blue in the middle of them. It was still one of the strangest pairs of eyes Gus had ever seen.
Gus, good to see you,
Dave said, looking straight at Gus. Then he looked at Kit and Lily.
Hello. I'm Melody's father, the curator. I'm known as Dave in the current time period.
Lily and Kit were both staring hard at Dave as if he were a ghost.
I'm sorry, should I not be here?
Dave asked, looking very unsure.
You look like my husband, Felix, Lily blurted out.
I think he looks more like Vince,
Kit muttered.
So strange.
For the first time that Gus could ever remember, Dave looked stunned. Standing there, the curator watched the two women with unmoving eyes and held breath. Several seconds slipped away before he let out a slow sigh.
I'm sorry, you said I looked like someone. I'm afraid I have no relatives here on this plane, other than a daughter,
Dave said with a somewhat cold tone.
Yes, you look like my husband. And yes, his brother, too,
Lily repeated.
Sorry, it's just so strange.
Not a problem. And your names are?
Dave asked. To Gus, he still sounded like he was on edge. Kit. Kit Campbell.
Lillian Campbell.
Dave nodded his head and then shook it.
Sorry, you're married to who?
Felix Campbell.
Both women said at the same time.
My sister is married to Felix's brother, Vince Campbell.
Trish added helpfully from her side of the table. Dave's head swung in her direction and he stared at her.
Oh my shit, you're a dryad,
he croaked suddenly. Then he started to laugh, followed by hiccuping sobs.
There are no dryads here anymore.
What the fuck?
My name is Miles. Miles Campbell. I'm Vince's father and Felix's uncle. They're cousins, not brothers,
Dave said in a broken voice.
And I'm Melody's dad. So I guess that makes you all sisters-in-law. Well, except for you, little dryad. You're in a weird legal incest thing.
Chapter 13. Rat Warrens. Faster than Gus expected, Dave, now Miles in Gus's head since that's what everyone was now calling him, had seated himself on the other side of the table near Kit and Lily. Melody had quickly joined in and was asking questions of all three of them. They were all exchanging stories about Felix and Vince, Melody's brother and cousin, respectively. It seemed everyone else quickly realized this was somewhat of a family moment and had turned to their own discussions. Alex waited around for a minute, then simply left the room, apparently having somewhere else he'd rather be if he didn't need to be sitting here. Vanessa ended up on a phone call with what sounded like Serafina, but Gus couldn't be completely sure. For his part, Gus spent the time chatting with Trish. The elven dryad sorceress had been curious to learn more of Miles and the Campbell girls, but had also realized she was a very minor piece in their puzzle. 10 minutes passed before the Campbell family seemed to realize what they'd done and sheepishly turned back to Gus, Vanessa, and Trish.
I'm so sorry,
Miles said, shaking his head.
I'm just catching up with family.
Gus said, interrupting gently.
And I get it. I'd probably do the same. Don't worry about it. So, apparently I have a brother-in-law and cousin-in-law. Yes,
Miles said, glancing at Melody.
Felix is my nephew from my brother. My twin brother. Vince is my son. They're in separate, universes. I'm surprised they found one another, to be honest.
Really? Lily asked with a chuckle. Felix never surprises me anymore. If he hadn't done something mind-boggling in a week or so, I started to get worried. It meant something much larger was coming.
Miles shook his head and laughed, looking at Lily.
See? I don't know that, Felix. My nephew was a fairly quiet and easygoing guy. He definitely inherited a great deal of his father's powers, but they were locked away until he turned 18,
Miles explained. His father had the same powers? Kit asked.
Similar powers, not quite the same,
Miles said with a wave of his hand.
He technically wasn't in possession of them himself, though, until he was an adult. Quirk of the powers that be versus what power he was given. Then again, his powers were... Actually, that's a good question. How did he end up expanding his powers?
He owns me,
Lily said with a weird look.
Me too, Kit murmured. Skipper took over the city and slavery became... legal, in a way.
Superheroes were bought and sold like toaster ovens. Felix bought me and put me back together after Skipper tore me apart.
Kippa,
growled Miles and then rolled his eyes.
Should have killed her when I had the chance.
What?
Lily asked.
You knew Skipper?
Unfortunately, she's an agent of our enemy. Has been for a while. Long story, and...
Miles paused, looking around the room.
And not mine to tell,
he said finally, looking back to his nieces-in-law.
Anyway, that would definitely explain why Felix was able to power up. But enough of all this. We should really be talking about taking back this universe from the Silent One. Sure,
Gus said, watching Melody as everyone else talked. He could tell she was desperate to ask more questions about her brother and cousin. All she wanted to do was sit down and drag every little fact out of everyone here until she knew enough. Most likely doubly so, since she had no idea that her father had had a family before her. Pushing his way into Melody's thoughts, Gus sat himself down right at the center of her mind, in such a way that she knew he was there. Knew he was there and that he wasn't going anywhere. At first, her thoughts scrabbled all over him like goats going up a cliff face, much in the same way they had been darting around in every direction possible just as he entered, a wild disarray of scattered bits of memories, thoughts, and empty spots she'd noticed from her father's past, tightly held together by sheer force of will lest she might explode in a frenzy of excitement. Suddenly, all those thoughts simply collapsed atop him and went still, her mind centering itself and bracing against the slow, steady calm that was Gus. Melody's shoulders slowly dipped, her body posture mellowed out, and her entire being looked far more relaxed. More of her thoughts moved over to him and began to pile up all over his presence. Miles noticed the change and glanced at Melody, then back to Gus.
So, we're all here to bring back the Originator,
Miles said.
He's an interesting person, to say the least. He can definitely give the Silent One a fight, though. He has already, and is still continuing to do so, I imagine. A fight that's gone on for an untold number of years, across worlds, universes, and galaxies over eons and eons. I honestly can't even begin to think about how many lifetimes he's watched and lived through. Uh-huh,
Gus said, wondering when Miles would get to the point. Inside Melody's head, Gus could feel it as she settled into a very comfortable mindset, one that was rapidly warming up with thoughts of him and what she wanted to do to him.
Bringing it all back to the Originator,
Miles muttered.
I've been digging around in this council you stirred up, and what they've been doing behind the scenes.
Now Gus was interested, turning his full attention to Miles.
At first I thought they were just a clandestine group out for some type of purpose or goal,
said Miles.
Except when I made some headway into them, I found that most of my sources were blocked, that my primary avenues of gaining information weren't available to me and weren't usable. And let's be direct here. A lot of those are mystical by your standards. There's no way anyone could actually hide from me.
Council? Lily asked quietly.
Council. They're all bogeymen, believe it or not,
Miles said with a laugh.
In fact, I'm pretty sure it comprises almost the entire population of bogeymen. Given that most people think they were hunted to extinction, them making a group for themselves isn't surprising. Gus here has been thwarting their plans for a while now. They were behind the Fed bombings, the terrorist attack on the bowl game, and several other situations that aren't worth mentioning.
All bogeymen?
Gus asked, feeling rather odd about that statement.
Yes, all. After I looked into your own background, I started to really look around into your race as a whole,
explained Miles.
And believe me, I can look. You, your mother, and your sister are the only ones of your race I've ever found that aren't in the council.
and given that your mother doesn't know her parents, it leaves some interesting and open-ended questions. Like, was she a one-night stand no one expected? A lost child? Or a kidnapping?
Blinking, Gus didn't quite know how to fit those questions and thoughts into his life. It opened a very large hole in what he believed about his family.
Given that you're not a normal variety of boogeymen either, with your special heritage, I'd say your family is definitely part of the council. Likely a leading member of it, in fact, said Miles. The question becomes, how did your mother fall outside of their grasp, and why? But that's somewhat beside the point, because the council works for the Silent One. They have their own goals and desires, but at the end of the day, they gain a large amount of power by serving him. They get a lot of benefits from that, and from the Silent One's agents, like Seville and Skipper.
Whew. Does that mean we need to go after the council? Vanessa asked, standing at the end of the table. And didn't we already rip a good hole in them? We busted an entire compound, didn't we?
Yes, we do need to go after them, Miles agreed. And yes, you did poke a hole into their organization. Except, you didn't.
We didn't? Trish asked.
The Fed found a base and it was hit. Information was gained, said Miles. And then it all vanished. It was removed from existence. The only people with any knowledge of it are in this room, and your friends in the Fed. And I imagine they've all been told to ask no questions about it and never bring it up again. No one is looking for more underground bases. Those that were found, which hadn't been hit, are now non-existent.
What?
Gus asked, now feeling rather nervous and annoyed.
The Fed is compromised, or at least the governing body of it, or those above it. Finn and Mark are going to be given some very boring jobs for the foreseeable future, Miles murmured. All information about those underground bases is gone now, as if they never existed. Thankfully, I have all that data, all the reports, all the flagged possible underground bases. I even took the liberty of launching my own drones with ground-penetrating radar, just to confirm things. Should never go in without confirmation.
And what were you planning on doing?
Melody asked, turning toward her father.
Hit them, of course. But now that I know I'm not alone, I don't have to. In fact, I think this would be a great time to use your company, dear.
Miles said, smiling at his daughter.
I think a few of you should go visit one location in particular. One that had the largest footprint I'd seen. Truly massive, in fact. More like the size of a city, all its own.
And where's that? Trish asked.
A small town by the name of Cooley, California. Not much more than a couple thousand people live there, but there's a lot more going on there, obviously.
Miles said, turning toward Melody again.
Like I said, a perfect opportunity for your company. You can investigate, infiltrate, and hunt all at the same time.
Sounds like a plan,
Melody said, then gave her father a rather predatory smile.
Let's talk numbers. My people aren't cheap, and I've got the best-in-class people.
Even as she spoke, Melody's thoughts were well past warm territory and had dipped down into the molten hot type of thoughts, crowding around Gus's presence and slowly drowning him in sexual fantasies of the things she wanted him to do to her. Or her to him. Driving into the city, Gus was a little concerned with the situation. Melody, Janelle, and Dolly, and Chloe were all heading off to a second location, a smaller base that Miles had identified, though it was still something he wanted looked into. That left him with Serafina, Trish, and Vanessa. Being the larger location, he'd been given Serafina as his tech support and Trish as his magical counterpart. Indali would serve as their home base coordinator between the two locations, since she could be in both groups. What bothered him, though, was that he wasn't with Melody. Again. In both of the two jobs they'd been hired for, he'd been separated from her. It was starting to annoy him. Much as Melody did care for the others, so did he, but Melody also held a unique place for him.
It's the color of your contract. It's also why you're Indigo,
Indali murmured.
I'm glad that you care for me in your own way, but if you didn't love Melody above all others, you'd be a very poor Indigo for her. And it's also why she loves you in the same way.
Gus's eyebrows went upward at that comment.
You're right. I didn't really think of it like that, but you're right. That's the very nature of the Indigo contract, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We were all chosen for our roles, specific by color, based on us as people. You are Indigo. Love and fidelity. If you hadn't resisted having so many people join the contractor marriage, you'd also be a poor Indigo.
Letting out a slow breath, Gus turned his head and looked over to Vanessa, who was driving, then glanced to the back seat where Trish was sleeping. Her head was resting against the glass, her full lips glistening, her lovely face slightly illuminated by the sun peeking through the side window.
It's not as if I don't love them, or you.
Of course you love us, but not in the same way. And I'm not offended by that either. You were quite, tender with me the other night. I know you care,
Indali said.
The others would agree if you asked them. They all understand the situation as well.
Ness, I love you,
Gus said, looking toward her.
Don't I know it, you big lug. I think I'd like a little less kissing next time. It was really nice, but you actually chapped my lips,
Vanessa said with a chuckle, glancing over at him.
And before you say something stupid, yes, I know you love Melody in a different way. You're her Indigo. She talked to all of us about it when we contracted. That you were different and would be above all others. That was the point of the Indigo.
See, I told you that they'd answer the same, though I'm surprised she told you about what Melody said. She had us promise we wouldn't tell you if we could avoid it,
said Indali.
What? Why not?
Because she was afraid you'd feel guilty about it.
Thinking about it, Gus realized he probably would have if he hadn't thought of it first. Reaching to the console, he took Vanessa's right hand in his left and held on to it.
So, partner, what do you think we should do first?
Gus asked, squeezing her hand. Vanessa didn't respond immediately. Her hand was somewhat limp in his own, in fact. Then she squeezed his very firmly, holding to it. Get to the hotel, see what's going on with it. Check in, ask about food, Vanessa murmured. Normal stuff, so we don't stand out. We'll be here a bit, and they're definitely going to check us out. Let's just try to make sure we don't get too much attention. The beard and shaved head definitely do a fair job of disguising you, but there's no reason to push it. Gus couldn't really disagree with that. Trish had given him a month's worth of facial hair to work with this morning. Pairing that without having any hair on his head made him look radically different.
Sounds like a good plan. I think a lot of this is going to be sneaking around at night for me, and you and Trish asking questions during the day,
Gus mused.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we'll start asking around about jobs, places to rent, that sort of thing. See if we can't get in a bit with the locals. Sarah did a pretty deep check to see if there's anything on the net, and there really isn't. This is going to be like something out of an old TV show.
Grunting at that, Gus leaned back into his chair. She wasn't wrong. It really did feel like this would be a lot of digging around, snooping, and investigating. And to be honest, he'd be thankful for that. He was far more comfortable with that and knew he was good at it. Looking out the window as they rolled through the city, Gus had the feeling that most everyone here was unaware of what was going on beneath them, that they were all going about their lives in blissful ignorance.
But there'll be a few, a handful. Those are the ones I have to find. Find them, scour their thoughts, and figure it all out.
Agreed. Once we've done that, I can check in with Mel,
Indali said.
Yeah, though, I really think we should push. See if we can collect as much as we can. Last time we left and they ended up catching wind of what we were going to do, I really don't want to pull out.
I don't remember you pulling out, and I didn't ask you to either. Either time,
said Indali, clearly smiling as she said it.
And yes, I do agree that we should probably not let up once we get in. It definitely seems like they're far more entrenched than anyone believed.
As he'd promised he'd do, Gus had taken Indali apart and then taken her apart. She didn't seem to let him forget it for much more than an hour or two, either.
Agreed. If it comes down to it, will you lie for me?
Lie for you?
Indali asked, her tone switching rapidly to curious and concerned.
If I ask you to cut your projection and lie to anyone who asks that we can communicate with anyone, would you? For me?
I lie? To Mel?
Indali clarified.
Yup, lie. To Mel. Would you lie for me if I asked you to? If we don't tell her certain things and act without her knowledge, she has plausible deniability. She can blame me for it if it went wrong, even if it went right for us.
I see. Yes, of course I'll lie for you,
said Indali without a pause.
You may have a special place for Melody, but we all have a special place for you, Indigo. I have no problem at all lying to the others for you, nor would I say no if you asked me to leave the others and you and I slip away together.
I'll keep that in mind. Thanks.
Here we are, Vanessa said, taking her hand from his and pulling the wheel to the right. Bumping up into a parking lot, Gus realized that the hotel they were staying at was certainly generous with that term. Because to him, it looked far more like a motel, and no one could ever confuse it with anything else.
Well, let's see how bad it is,
Gus murmured.
We can let Trish doze a bit longer. Just lock the doors.
Sure, no worries, Vanessa said, unbuckling her seatbelt.
I'm suddenly thankful I'm not there with you. We're actually in a rather nice hotel over here,
Indali admitted. Stepping out of the car, Gus glanced down at his shoes. A rat ran over them and scurried off into a hole dug out of the corner of the building.
Yeah, I think I'd rather be there too. In fact, I might just sleep in the car.
Chapter 14. Low Heat.
Oh, I swear, I've never been hit on so much before, muttered Trish as she sat down on the bed. Then she leaned back and flopped onto it, her legs hanging off the edge.
I mean, I get hit on a lot, but it was never ending today.
Yeah, they were definitely giving you a run, Vanessa growled, taking a seat at the small desk off to one side.
I didn't even dress in a nice way. I'm just in a frumpy blouse and jeans that are really loose, Trish muttered.
To be fair, you're probably the single most beautiful woman I've ever met,
Gus offered from where he was sitting on the love seat.
I mean, really, Trish, you'd give any woman on the planet anxiety if they put you next to her. I doubt this little bit of nowhere has anything like you, regardless of what you're wearing.
Aw, Indigo, I love you, Trish said, turning her head toward Gus, the smile spreading across her face like the sun rising.
I mean, it's true, though,
Gus said with a shrug of his shoulders.
You really are amazing to look at.
Thank you. I'm so glad you think that way, Trish said, wrinkling her nose. Then she kissed the air toward him. I'll make sure I reward you for those lovely comments later. But I think tonight you're working.
Definitely working, Gus agreed.
We didn't find out diddly squat, Vanessa said, closing her eyes. Other than that, the only places to work here are all entry-level blue-collar stuff. That or farm work. Places to rent are here and there, some houses to buy. Not a whole lot of new people moving in, though. Older little city, not a lot in the way of development. Which kind of begs the question, how do you get new jobs without new people? And how do you get new people without new jobs?
I have no idea. I'm a city boy, born and bred,
Gus said with a chuckle.
It can be sponsored in, like the city offsetting taxes or providing a cash amount. That isn't likely to happen unless it's something desperately needed. I imagine the more likely occurrence, and what I've personally seen, is people moving in for the distinct intention of opening up a business. Usually, because whatever they're opening doesn't currently exist,
Indali murmured.
I mean, imagine if they didn't have a hardware store. It wouldn't take long for someone to open one up now, would it?
I don't like being so far from my tree, Trish muttered, still watching Gus. I think I'd like it moved, and you'll need to help me, Indigo. I promise to pay you handsomely for the job.
You're a tree?
Gus asked, not quite sure what she meant.
Oh, I never really talked about that at all, did I?
Trish said with a soft laugh.
As I'm a dryad, I do have a tree. I don't have to be around it as much as my sisters do, or even as close.
A tree?
Gus said, his mind jumping straight to the one outside of the PID that he'd adopted.
Yes, it's the tree outside the PID building. The one you were taking care of, my Indigo,
Trish murmured, slowly rolling over onto her stomach. Then she slowly inched forward onto the bed and got up on her elbows.
I had no idea, Gus admitted. It just, looked like it needed help.
I know, but I was already mildly interested in you before I realized you were the one taking care of my poor tree. Then when I realized you were, well, I always made sure I came a little earlier to work so I could take care of your area. If I came at my original time, you were always gone.
Unable to help himself, Gus started to laugh and shook his head.
I started staying later just so I could sneak a few looks at you,
admitted Gus.
That and, hand you my trash can.
Trish just kept smiling at him, slowly tilting her head to one side. The glow in her eyes was growing by the second. Her slow, steady gaze was rapidly heating up.
All right, this is rather cute and all, but I think you need to get rolling, don't you?
Vanessa asked. There was a slight edge to her voice, but she didn't sound annoyed.
She's interested in a three-way, but is too tired. Wants a three-way, in fact, I bet. If you two keep getting lovey-dovey like that, she's going to have a hard time saying no, despite being exhausted. Well, that's what I think, at least,
Indali guessed.
That's how I'd be feeling. When Trish starts getting glowy eyes and you're around, there's very little that can stop her.
Groaning, Trish sighed and put her face down onto the bed, as if she were hiding.
Yes, he does need to get going,
Trish said in a muffled voice. Then she lifted her head back up and looked at him. Her eyes were still glowing, but they weren't getting any brighter.
Ooh, but he's going to wake us up when he gets back, aren't you, Gus?
If I can, I will,
Gus said, then stood up. Trish nodded and put her head back down on the covers. Gus was dressed in clothing that would be useful for hunting at night. The only thing he had on him that he didn't quite want was Indali.
but that was mostly because he didn't plan on using her as a weapon. He was only taking her along to take her along, because she'd actually been hurt the last time he hadn't taken her along.
"I'm ready," Serafina said in his ear. "I've tapped into everything in the city that could be useful to us. Cameras, ATMs, doorbells, anything that might give us an idea of what's going on."
Much in the same way he didn't want Indali with him, Serafina was going to be tagging along as well. Except he couldn't really argue very much with her presence. She would be providing him with real-time tech support, oversight, assistance, and generally being useful.
"And I'm here as well,"
Indali said, partly in the background.
"We figured it would be easier if we could all talk and share information at the same time."
"Great. That's, great."
Gus walked over to Vanessa and knelt down partway to meet her eyes.
"You okay, my yellow? My love?"
Gus asked in a quiet voice, holding her gaze with his own. Vanessa took in a slow breath, watching his face, then let it out with a sigh and a smile.
"Wake me up first," Vanessa whispered, reaching up and setting her hand to his cheek. "I want some alone time with you. I miss you, and I want a three-way after I get a nap, but only after we can talk and just hang out."
"Okay, I can do that,"
Gus said with a smile. What she really meant was she wanted to have sex alone with him first.
"Trish, I'm gonna wake Ness up first. We're gonna try to have sex without waking you up."
"That sounds fun,"
Trish said, her face still buried in the covers.
"Do it next to me on the same bed. Make it a fun challenge."
Vanessa was blushing bright red now as she stared up at him, though she also had a smirk on her face and looked rather amused. "Awful," she murmured, then pulled gently on his cheek and kissed him tenderly.
"Go on. Come back and get me already."
"Definitely going to do that. Sleep well until then,"
Gus murmured and stood up again. He stopped by the closet and grabbed his long trench coat. Throwing it on, he pulled the empty trash bag out of the unused trash can and stuffed it in a coat pocket. He had to leave via the hallway and lobby. That meant there was no telling who he might run into. Traipsing about in his sneakwear wasn't going to win him the Best Concealed Detective Award. Leaving through horror magic had its own problems as well. If there was a camera in the hall, or the door swipes were recorded elsewhere, they'd have an invisible man wandering around. It was just easier for him to leave, vanish into the night, and come back in the morning.
"Good night, love,"
Trish said in a purr.
"I do hope you two wake me up so I can watch."
"Night, my indigo," Vanessa called.
"Good night, loves,"
Gus replied with a grin. Opening the door, Gus got his coat settled and closed, then stepped out into the hall. Glancing around, he couldn't see any cameras, but that didn't mean there weren't any, especially in today's day and age where a camera could be so incredibly small. Walking down the hall, Gus got to the lobby without incident. Standing at the desk was the same man who checked them in earlier this morning. At this point, Gus was pretty sure the man was the owner. He was a fairly nondescript-looking man in his 50s with brown hair and blue eyes. Across the desk from him was a younger man in his late 20s. He was good-looking, had dark green eyes and blonde hair.
"Just tell me, huh?"
asked the younger man as Gus walked up.
"Uh-huh. Besides,
Pausing, the owner turned to look at Gus. The flash of surprise and panic in his eyes was all he needed to realize this young fool was asking about Trish.
"Let me guess,"
Gus said with a growl as he walked up to the desk.
"You want to know what the gorgeous woman's name is, or what room she's in?"
Putting his elbow onto the desk, Gus leaned toward the young man.
"Her name is none of your concern, and she's also my wife. As to a room number, that's also none of your concern, and not something you should really be asking about,"
Gus said in a low voice.
"And if anyone were to find out her name or her room number, I think I'd have to give someone the beating of their life, possibly breaking both their arms, their legs, and maybe a few other things.
The raw fear flowing out of both men only fed Gus's anger. It was obvious they had been indeed talking about Trish.
Did you just threat?
Gus turned and looked at the owner as soon as he started talking. His words died off very quickly. Fear boiled out of the man in waves now. What little bravery he'd worked up in that second was snuffed out like a candle in the wind.
I would never deign to share, share a customer's information,
muttered the man.
Well then, you clearly have nothing to worry about. And since you're the only one who has that information, I know who to come looking for if, say, someone drops by tomorrow, or flowers show up, or candy, or anything like that. Right?
Gus said in a flat tone. Nodding his head slightly, the man's face had gone white. With a sneaking suspicion, Gus snapped a thread of power into the man's mind and scoured his thoughts in a flash. Unfortunately, the hotel owner, who was named Nick, had already shared Trish's information with the man who came by, the son of the sheriff, a 20-year-old deputy who didn't know his ass from a hole in the ground.
Great. Then there shouldn't be an issue,
Gus said with a bleak smile, then turned and looked at the young man, who was already leaving. He clearly wanted nothing to do with any of this.
And if there is an issue, I'll see you back here, Nick,
murmured Gus to the man, unable to contain himself. Turning, Gus left the lobby and went out into the parking lot. The night was full and dark. There was no one around. Reaching into his pockets, he pulled out some heavy-duty leather gloves, ones with reinforced knuckles that could take a beating.
Dig into the sheriff and his son, a deputy,
Gus said under his breath as he turned down the sidewalk and pulled on the gloves. He moved toward a dark corner of the building, wanting to get out of sight immediately.
On it,
Serafina and Indali said at the same time.
You check the web stuff. I'll dig into the Fed. I still have those back doors you left me, said Indali.
Oh, sure. That works. That'll be quicker, agreed Serafina.
Turning the corner, Gus shucked off his trench coat and pulled out the trash bag. Stuffing the coat into it, he realized it wasn't going to fit, but it'd at least hold most of it. Pulling off his boots and socks, he stuck them into the jacket and gave up. It was just too much. He needed a bag to put his cast-offs in. Turning, he stuffed the bag into a nearby bush and made sure it was out of sight. Standing there, he contemplated how he wanted to do this. Then he realized that the simplest answer was the most fun one as well.
Let loose.
Letting out a slow, heavy breath, Gus could feel his control melt away in a flash. The rigid mindset he kept over himself at all times bled off him and became nothing. The fear he'd tasted from Nick and the young man was all he needed to kickstart his horror magic. With a noiseless, magical whoomph, he felt his heart shudder. His vision changed and became brighter. Colors distorted and light sources themselves became less intense. It was as if a knot in his back just unwound and he could finally stretch himself out.
Oh, that feels great,
Gus growled.
Gus?
Asked Serafina.
Is that you?
Course.
Gus said in a grunt as he coiled himself up, getting low to the ground. Then he leapt upward, grabbing hold of the edge of the roof. Getting his feet to the edge, he looked toward the second floor roof above him. Jumping once again, he cleared the distance and landed atop it. Flowing over to the edge, he stepped up to it and took in a deep breath, inhaling the scent of the city. There was more than enough fear permeating the night to keep his horror magic alive. Nick down below, fearing for his life. Trish back in the room, afraid that Gus wouldn't wake her up for sex when he got back.
that it was one of the only areas where she knew she had complete control and she never wanted to lose her grasp on it. Vanessa, feeling terrified at how afraid she was that Gus was out there alone at night without a partner or backup, and a multitude of others all around him, living in their homes, renting rooms, moving about the streets, all with their everyday normalized fears.
A hunt without a target,
Gus said, and then leapt from the roof toward the street. Hitting it with the slap of his feet, he crouched low to the ground and started to run on all fours. He wasn't in a race. He simply felt more comfortable lower to the ground. His figure wasn't as easily spotted by the humans. They couldn't or didn't want to spot him.
Sheep. All of them.
Rolling along down the street, Gus kept his senses at their peak, sorting through people's fears as he went. In a place like this, there were bound to be people afraid of being caught. It was merely a matter of finding them. Snorting at the thought, he ran on until he reached an intersection. There were two cars stopped at it, waiting for the light to go green. Moving off the road by leaping upward, Gus caught the top of the streetlight and hung to it with one hand, his bare feet holding to the metal with a creak.
Got a hit on the deputy, nothing on the sheriff,
Serafina said.
Date rape, didn't make it to court. I say, pay him a visit.
No,
said Gus, scanning the surrounding area, taking it all in.
I'm not Yellow Eyes, and I don't feed on justice like he does. Besides, now that you found him, chances are you're already ruining his life.
Gus could distantly see what looked like a supermarket. Serafina didn't respond, but he could hear the angry clack of her keyboard as she worked her fingers back and forth on her instrument of destruction. There wasn't a whole lot to see from where he was at the moment, and he wasn't quite sure where to begin, either.
Give me a search pattern to work with. Something I can do street by street. This is going to take some time, and I don't have a better idea on how to start other than randomly,
Gus admitted. Bracing himself against the light post, he dove forward toward the ground. Hitting the ground running, he was off at a trot, once more moving on all fours. He was very glad he'd remembered the gloves tonight.
I got it. I'm already done with Deputy Dipshit, grumbled Serafina.
She was ruining his life. Good.
He could hear Indali laughing in his mind at his thoughts.
Agreed, but I won't tell her that aloud. I don't want to encourage her into bad behavior. She's still quite young,
Indali said. Reaching the parking lot, Gus slowed down to inspect everything. Out in one corner, he could see several trucks and a sedan parked close together, far removed from any customers who were looking to get late-night anything from the store.
Curious. Let's go take a peek while we wait for a plane.
Staying in the shadows and out of the lights, Gus kept himself to a very slow crawl as far as speed went. He wanted to sneak up on this group and see what they were up to.
I'm gonna use you to talk to Sarah. Stalking.
Of course. It's one of the reasons I'm here,
said Indali with a laugh.
You mentioned previously you couldn't have spoken to anyone even if you'd wanted to. But you and I, my bearer, we go above that, beyond it. We're with one another at all times.
You've gotten awfully clingy since we had sex.
Gus's thought was blunt and without any modesty to it. He just couldn't quite bring himself to care for society's niceties while he was stalking prey.
Yes, I am. You possessed me wholly. Now I'm going to possess you. What you did to me, and then my projection, no one has ever done in any way. That was a first for me, Gustavus. I will take my price from you in return,
Indali promised.
Do so.
Grimacing, Gus realized what he was looking at. It was a bunch of teenagers hanging out, drinking beer, sounding like pale imitations of their parents, and trying their hardest to look like grown-ups in front of one another. Rolling his eyes, Gus came to a stop and held himself in a crouch, watching the children. They all reeked of fear, false bravado, and idiocy.
Not all of us spent our teenage years running around in combat or hunting,
Indali murmured, reminding him that she'd been born of the fires of war, her sentience granted simply through ending the lives of so many.
I'd almost be envious of them. Almost. Youth and life are wasted on the ignorant and young.
Too true.
Then I looked at her and was like, "Bring it, bitch," crowed one of the young men.
You did not say that to your mom, said one of the girls with a laugh.
I sure did. Then I just let loose and...
belched the child.
Right in her face. Whoa, that one stinks.
That's just your breath, fuckstick,
said a second young man.
Yeah, well, fuck,
burped the young man. The audience present laughed. Gus winced and shook his head.
You, fuck you, just like that.
All right,
Serafina said, cutting through the stupidity.
I've got a layout for you that should give you a good path to sweep and clear. We'll work it in almost a spiral.
Great, thanks. Where do I start?
Gus listened as Indali repeated his statement back to Serafina.
What? Why are... Oh, I get it, said Serafina. Yeah, you can start there. Did you know you look really different as a boogie? I borrowed a drone from the police. I have it zoomed in on you. It's really hard to see you as well.
Looking up, Gus couldn't see or hear the drone up above him, but he didn't doubt it was there. After all, the whole point was to be there, but unseen.
Just head back to the road you were on, turn right, and start down that, dictated Serafina. I'll lead you from there. It should only take us a few days to run the whole city down, street to street, until we hit the outskirts and plains.
All right.
Looking back to the laughing teenagers, Gus had a fun idea. He knew for a fact that kids like this often found themselves in situations they shouldn't be in, mostly from being out like this and doing exactly what they were doing. No good was ever found when one was out late.
You should all go home,
growled Gus, tinging his words with horror magic.
Before something finds you.
Turning, he prowled off into the bushes and started the search pattern. Chapter 15. Gifts.
Nothing,
grumbled Gus with a shake of his head.
Not a damn thing. It's all the same stuff everywhere. Not a damn whiff or hint of anything at all.
Growling under his breath, Gus began to trot back toward the center of the city. Over the last 4 days, he had run every street, avenue, and boulevard, from the center to the very outskirts and everything in between. Nobody was out of the ordinary. Not one person reeked of any type of abnormal fear that might be expected. Nothing that would signify that these people were hiding a secret here, that they were all part of an elaborate organization built to seemingly bring the world to ruin.
Just a bunch of small-town people living their lives. This is a waste,
Gus complained.
Certainly feels more like home than I'd like it to,
Serafina muttered. Realizing he was borderline being insulting to her, Gus sighed.
Sorry, Sarah. I didn't mean anything by it. I'm just frustrated at the fact that we haven't found anything. Not a hint, clue, or a whiff of anything that'd tell us what's going on,
said Gus.
We should have found something by now, shouldn't we?
I'm not sure, Indali said over the line. Trish and Ness can't find anything that stands out of the ordinary either. And honestly, neither have we. Mel is starting to think maybe both sites are actually abandoned, that we're wandering around an empty home, so to speak.
To be fair, I wouldn't stick around in a location that was likely compromised,
Sarah added.
I mean, that's some grade A-level idiocy, isn't it?
Only if you assume they're not condescending pricks who believe they're smarter than everyone else,
muttered Gus.
Ego is often the downfall of the intelligent.
Everyone grew quiet as Gus made his way back to the hotel. There really wasn't anything else for him to do. He would check in with Mel in the morning and report his findings, which were nil.
She's waiting for you again,
mumbled Serafina. Rolling his eyes, Gus didn't deviate from his course. Since scaring off the teenagers that first night, none of them had returned, except for one young girl, who seemed particularly determined to get in touch with him, with something that had left without a trace except for some claw marks in the ground, something that didn't actually sound human at all. When Gus had rewatched the footage from Serafina's drone, he'd been surprised to hear just how abnormal his voice was. He knew it wasn't his normal voice when he shifted into his true form, but he hadn't known it was that different.
Why not ask her?
Indali offered.
What?
Gus asked.
Ask the girl. She wants to reach out